Hey, hello, welcome to episode 60. I guess this will serve as of the Always Rational K-Pop Podcast. Operating alone this week, I'm Dame Dr. Foxy Brown. Unfortunately, Noelle is unable to join us as she has a few health issues that will keep her from recording for right now. Because she's not here, I just wanted to go over a couple things, namely my feelings on Epic High's 7th album, 99, and some emails that we got from a few lovely, lovely readers. Listeners. I'm so glad you guys emailed. That gave me, I don't know, 20 minutes more of material. So, Epic High over the last week just released 99. They're highly anticipated after 3 years, after Tajin Miro, after that whole debacle with Tableau. Everyone's out of the army, they're under YG Entertainment, which gave us a little bit of pause. But you know, there's been other people that have made albums we enjoyed while sort of working with the, you know, evil mainstream corporation, as it were. Of course, Tableau has very good reason for being with YG. His wife, as we all know, is an actress under their company, and he got a lot of support from them that he wasn't able to get from his previous label, Woolim Entertainment. They pretty much just threw him to the wolves, as it were, by not doing anything about the situation, not putting out any positive press, not standing behind him. He kind of had to do everything by himself when it comes to engaging the documentary that went with him to Harvard to show from the registrar's office, look, dude, I graduated from, from Stanford. I graduated. Why are you guys jerking me around like this? And of course, unfortunately, we know about his descent into depression, about the paranoia that he faced, you know, and the whole situation is extremely tragic. And there was a time, of course, like, as he said, he thought he would never make music again. So his first solo album, really, was a great moment for him, and for the most part, I will say that the majority of us loved that album. So any trepidation we had initially over the new Epic High album was kind of assuaged by that. You know, we all thought, hey, we were scared about his solo album, but he made it, and it didn't seem to really be any YG influence other than Taeyang being on the song, which most of us don't have a problem with. A lot of us that listen to this podcast anyway, like Taeyang as an artist, and although he's an idol, it doesn't hurt us as much to see him in the song, though Epic High pretty much had a somewhat strict principle of not wading out into idol waters, even though they have collaborated with a person who some people may consider an idol in Yoon-ha, even though she's not treated as an idol for the most part. But we saw a lot of the promotional activity from YG, and we thought, you know, well, they didn't mess with Tableau, even though it felt like that album was mostly done when it released, so they won't mess with the other two guys, right? But It's Cold came out, and people were kind of, oh, you know, this is an Epic High sounding song, it's all good. But then they released the videos for Up and Don't Hate Me, and Up to me was extremely, extremely generic. I have not checked out the lyrics yet, I'm going to believe that they haven't gone far from their roots in terms of lyrically. They still are coming with deep lyrics and very good poetry. And they're still speaking to us on a certain level. But what I'm going to speak to, of course, is my first impressions of the album. Mostly because I'm not a Korean native speaker. And I loved Epic High from jump, from before I even knew that their songs were deep. I just heard the music and I was like, this is what I want to rock with. I loved Mithra's voice. I loved Tablo's mastery of what I later learned with both languages, Korean and English. So to come into this album and just only really like one song is kind of hard for me. Like, even the albums that people said, you know, Epic High fell down on, I think Remapping the Human Soul is one of them. People didn't like Pieces. People didn't like Love Scream, I think it is, their mini album. So even those, I always found something to genuinely love about it, and it was really sad to me to listen to this album, all 8 songs that are currently released. The last 2 tracks, an interlude and another song, are going to be released along with the physical copy of the album. And I just was sitting down in the car driving thinking, you know, there's nothing I connect to about the sound of this music. The best part about the song I like, which is track number 5, You Don't Deserve Her, is not only that it features Geico singing, thank God, and not Tablo, but that the first thing he says at the beginning of the song is something to the effect of, forget about the sticks, bring the lips. And it's a pure hip-hop sounding song. It's them rhyming over someone beatboxing, which is nothing like the sound of the rest of the album. Yet it's cold, sounds a lot like their previous work, has more of that experimental sound, whereas the other 6 tracks just sound like generic pop. Someone said it sounded like reject Big Bang music, and like, that's the unfortunate part. You're working with the same producers, you're gonna get the same sort of sound. Unfortunately, just from a surface level, it doesn't look like they worked with a lot of the previous producers they did. Maybe those people were tied to Woolim. Maybe they're not as friendly with those people as they used to be. I can't tell you what the answer is, so I don't know the answer, and I haven't really had the time to look into it for right now. It's just like a first impressions, I guess word vomit kind of thing. And I saw another comment that really struck me, is that Epic High was always very experimental. Again, one of my favorite songs by Epic High features Nell, and the title basically amounts to no title. At the very beginning of the song, before they start performing it together, Tablo says, no genres, just one music, and the person used that to illustrate what their thoughts were about the album, which is, Epic High doesn't have a sound, really. Sure, they both have their different rhyming styles, but musically, they're not tied down to one particular sound. You'll see it a lot with idols, I guess, but that varies from album to album. Like, this album may be a jazz-inspired album. The next album may be electronica-inspired. But Epic High was able to seamlessly meld songs based on or inspired by completely different genres into one album. I never really heard them. And it was always a joy to see them do something new. And yes, this is technically new for them, though they have had pop-inspired songs. It just feels like with this album, rather than setting the trends, they're following them. Like, rather than the things they did with their previous albums, definitely makes it sort of unsettling. There are songs like Wannabe where they pretty much insult the whole idol scene, and yet here they are several years later, pandering to it. And I get it, you know? You've been gone 3 years, you're unsure of your fan base, you went through a serious thing emotionally where people turned on you, so you're not exactly confident that you can do the same thing that, like, identified you as an artist and still get airplay and still get throngs of fans lining up for you. Because they had the advantage in the late 2000s that a lot of rap acts don't have. they managed to keep their underground integrity for the most part and still have mainstream appeal. That's a balancing act that artists all over the world aren't able to accomplish. At some point, the people who liked you when you're underground aren't gonna like you when you're mainstream, and it's very hard to appeal to both those sides. The first double album they released was called Brain and Heart, and one side was very lyrical, very deep, very underground, and the other side was a lot more pop, a lot more love song oriented. But they were more than just that. They were trying to show us with the double album that both of these things made up them, but here it doesn't feel like we're getting enough. And I don't know if this additional track is going to be different. I mean, obviously the guys seem to genuinely be behind the kind of work they've done. They're happy about the album, they're happy about their lives in general, and I'm glad for all of that. This album is going to have to miss me. Like, obviously this wasn't intended for me, and that's fine. Like, other people are gonna like this album, I don't. When it all comes down to it, so far there may be three tracks that I listen to again. It's definitely not gonna be Up, because I just hate the way Pop Bomb's voice sounds on that track. Like, everything about it bothers me. It's grating, it doesn't seem to go with the rest of the song. It seems like her voice is too strained, like she's singing out of her natural register. And it just felt like I would rather have Tablo, as much as I don't like his singing voice, I would rather not have her sing this hook. And I never really before got how limited she was as a singer. It definitely shows on this track. The video itself, incredibly generic, bunch of dudes skateboarding with the guys pretty much just standing there. Don't Hate Me is a lot more entertaining. A bunch of kids in Hollywood in Halloween costumes crash a department store that every guy is working at, and they all seem to hate their jobs. And without the context of the lyrics, maybe I don't appreciate the song as the song and video as much as I could. Yeah, the kids are cute. It's funny, I guess, to see them dressed up as a bunch of sociopaths and killers playing around and causing natural havoc in the store. But when you compare that to even the simplest of Epic High's older music videos, it feels like a huge letdown. And a big part of Epic High's appeal, I think, was that visual component, was the intricacy and the storytelling that they used in their music videos as well as in the songs. And to have there be two videos and both of them let me down is extremely disappointing. But unfortunately, the K-pop fandom doesn't allow for much in terms of criticism. So I've seen constantly, they've been through so much and you can't really say it's a bad album or it's not Epic High. It's just not something that you wanted. Which again, we're not artists, we don't have any control over the material. I get that. But, you know, we're all people, we're all free to have our own opinions. We can be disappointed in an album, not like it, and not support it. That doesn't make us not Epic High fans. It just means that, look, I'm a discriminating consumer, and what you put out this time, I'm not interested in it. It may not be objectively bad. Objectively, it may be a pretty good album. Subjectively, I don't like it. Alright, so I'm gonna take a quick break, and I'm gonna talk about some feedback, alright?
This goes out to all the poets out there. Keep spitting.
One day, soon it will be my time to shine.
Yeah, may the pen never dry. Keep your head high.
So, like I said, we have three emails to go over. I don't know how long this is going to go, or how upcoming we can tell by the end of it. But the first email is from Tim. Hello, Foxy Brown and Noel. Work has been super crazy lately, but I finally got a chance to sit down and write an email back. First of all, a big thanks for answering my email. It was a nice treat to hear both you and Noel respond on the podcast. I'm also glad that there was no animosity with the initiated discussion and all that, just an accidental confusion on my part. It was also nice to hear your thoughts on racial issues with the anime industry. It's always an interesting discussion if you meet a friend you can trust. Outside of that, I find it a little hard to get people to see my point of view. From an Asian male perspective, yes, I'm Asian. The whole spectrum of discussion is huge, so I will get into it with this email. Perhaps later if you'd like to hear my whole view on it while trying to keep it short. I feel like with regards to a large crowd, the biggest issue on the map is usually the relationship between blacks and whites. Those are talked about seriously in America. Then after that, there's a discussion about the Latino community. Then after that, nothing else seems to be that important. I feel Asians get put in that middle category. So if I complain about Asian reputation in Hollywood, most people just think I'm being silly and militant because other racial groups have it worse, or something like that. Which is a weird notion. So it's okay to let a problem continue to slide because it's not that big a problem. I guess Asians in the entertainment industry are the broken windshield wipers on your car. You leave it unfixed because it doesn't bother you that much. Although, I will admit something. There are those that have it worse. Let me tell you how bad Hollywood represents men from the Middle East. If we're sitting around having drinks and this comes up, my Persian friend in there, he always wins. In the end, I just wish that whether it's the American entertainment industry, or the Korean, Japanese, or Hong Kong industry, or the whatever, there's guilty on both sides of the pond. But that doesn't mean someone can't start being the bigger person and try and forward. About orange caramel lipstick. You know, that was the first video I've ever seen from Orange Caramel. I didn't know anything of their previous works. I've recently gone back to watch their other videos, and yeah, I get what you mean now. I only like lipstick. Usually, I don't like the whole cute little girl act either. When it comes to checking out other girl groups, I always immediately skip their first two or three songs, because they're typically in a tween cutesy phase. As much as I like Tinashe Day, Genie and Mr. Taxi, I don't like G into the New World at all. However, I did like Orange Caramel lipstick. I think this is due more to the pink and pretty boy concept they're doing. Reminds me of funny Japanese anime. So I know Orange Caramel makes you throw a little inside, but do me a favor. Go check out the video anyway, and tell me what you think. About Tika's I'll Be There, I've been listening to it more. As I said, I liked it upon hearing it the first time, but now it's growing on me even more. Remember when I said in the last email that I liked it, but we wish they would go back to darker, more serious stuff next? I take that back. Speaking can go wherever they want to go. I don't want to be one of those fans that only want one style coming from their favorite groups. If they want to explore and just go wherever they feel like going, whatever, do it. Just make it good is all I ask. Oh, and I love watching the dance practice. About Super Junior, I know where you guys are coming from. I came in sideways at Mr. Simple, so I don't have perspective. I think if I started listening to Super Junior at the same time you guys did, then I'd probably feel the same way. About Thomas Shinky's Catch Me, I agree with you both. Anyways, again, thanks for answering my email. It was fun to hear you respond during recording. Good stuff. Can't wait for the next episode. Okay, to briefly touch on the racism angle. I think we've talked about whenever racism is brought up, we always try to relate it to those same issues within the United States because while Noel is Asian, I don't have much perspective living anywhere other than here and in the U.S. So I guess I'm not necessarily comfortable talking about how it reflects within Native society. In the U.S., race relations between whites and blacks are talked about more, but it's not better discussed on any level. Obviously, most of the minorities inside the United States, whether it be racial, sexual, gender minorities, are not treated very well. It is an attempt to talk about being progressive, but there's not necessarily the serious push to do anything about it. So what we end up having really is the more vocal minorities talk about how they're mistreated, and then the majority tells them, no, you're lying. And it pretty much ends there. Regardless of which minority you're a part of, most likely you've experienced this, even among your own friend circle. Because it seems as though you realize, too, there are certain people that you don't bring this topic up with because, you know, they're just not equipped to deal with it. And, two, maybe their own privilege stops them from seeing that there's actually a problem. When it comes to Speak Up, dude, I completely agree with you. On first listen, I thought the song was okay, but kind of dumb. And like beneath Speaker, but then the more I heard it, the more I saw them perform it, is like these girls can do whatever they want all over the K-pop industry, and we will just eat it right up. In terms of Orange Caramel, yeah, I didn't read off the part about Lee Young, but she seems to be too talented for After School as it is now. They don't seem to be doing a particularly good job of figuring out what to do with someone that's talented in so many different ways musically. I feel you on the whole early GOTY music. I think only two or three groups that are currently out now that debuted pre-2012 have really come at us with a more adult concept, even if half the group are still children. And it succeeded to a degree. Format, I don't think, was particularly successful with that first song, which was kind of a fusion of cute and sexy. Miss A, I think, obviously blew it out of the water. 21, we know too, they didn't have the option of doing cute for aesthetic reasons. And After School, who started off with Ah, which was a sort of unapologetically sexy song with them performing mostly covered up in gym clothes, and it worked for me anyway. I don't know if it worked for everyone else, but their career continued. So yeah, cutesy stuff is just not my bag at all. I appreciate you emailing us again, Tim. I'm sorry Noelle isn't here and we can have a more lively discussion on your email. As always, we enjoy it. You raise a lot of good points and you spark a lot of discussion, so please keep sending us the emails. Okay, email number two is from Taylor. Title, thanks for an irrational, always rational K-pop listener. Hi Noelle and Dave, Dr. Foxy Brown. I've been meaning to write you guys for a while now, but for some reason I never got to it. Until tonight. Well, actually this morning, as I hastily cram for my microbiology exam this Friday. Anyways, I just wanted to write and say that I really appreciate your podcast. I haven't been listening for too long now, but I've actively listened to over half of your episodes already. If you couldn't guess from when I said earlier I'm a biology major, which is a fancy way of saying I don't really have a life since I spend most of my time studying or attempting to study. To me, K-pop, which even though I've only been actively listening to it for 2 years, will openly claim to have accumulated over 2 decades worth of K-pop knowledge is an escape. As I sit in my little dorm room reading chapter after chapter, or while tagging my mirror with organic mechanisms, I listen to your podcast and find some joy and able to better enjoy what would be a very tedious and boring study time. And for that, I would like to thank you. Now, I do have a suggestion for free talk topic as well. I'm not sure if you've all discussed this already, because like I said, I haven't listened to every episode yet. However, I'm going to suggest it anyway. I would love to hear both of your opinions about the sudden swarm of idols and dramas and on Korean television. Do you think they are taking roles that rightfully belong to young rookie Korean actors and actresses, aka the Lee Min-hos of tomorrow? Also, I would love to know how you've been able to balance your working career and past school career with your ever-time-consuming K-pop addiction. Keep up the good work, and I look forward to all your future episodes. Oh, and I hope you guys read my email on air. That would, like, make my day, my week, maybe even my month. Thanks again. So happy to help. I hope your day is made. Not that important, though. Your topic, as far as I can remember, we've never talked about it. It does bring to mind of something Samuel L. Jackson said about, I think, Eve being in a movie with him, where he expressed a lot of disappointment about these rappers and singers to a lesser extent. They were not only getting star vehicles without any background in acting, but they were, in his mind, stealing roles from actors that it rightfully belonged to. You know, they went to school, they did a lot of training, or they've worked their way from the bottom up. But because these people are already famous, they're getting priority roles over people that have worked so much harder and for so much longer. In terms of K-pop, though, I think it's a little bit different, only because as trainees, they do get acting classes, so they have that little bit of experience over someone like, say, a Britney Spears, who obviously Crossroads didn't work out very well. Obviously, I would love to discuss this more with Noelle in depth, as she watches more Korean dramas than I do. But I think this is an issue that's rife in almost every entertainment industry. Filmmakers want to make money. And one of the easiest, technically, although it's probably more of a headache, ways to make money is to rely on people that already have a huge fan base. That's why actors that already make $20 million per movie are going to get chosen over a nobody, because you need big names attached to movies to get people interested in coming, and it's unfortunate that it works that way. Occasionally, the young actors that we've never really heard of, they do get their opportunity to shine, and I'm really glad that that is still happening, even though it's probably not at the frequency that it used to. People are more willing, I guess, to take on the burden of having an unproven actor but a proven star appear in something, because, you know, sometimes you get people like Rain, sometimes you get people like Eric, sometimes you get those people that, had they not started out as a singer, they never would have been an actor and they never would have been able to carry a drama the way they have. Yoo-chun has turned out to be a surprisingly good actor, so is Jae-joon. Obviously, this doesn't happen with everybody. It's probably closer to 1 in 1,000,000 than 1 in 4. And I guess as a working actor, who they seem to have it way harder than the idols do, even though I guess humility will cause them to say, you know, the idol schedule is so tough. I think there's probably a good amount of resentment there. A lot of the new actors, let me not say a lot, there are quite a few new actors that are coming from idol companies that just never debuted as an idol but got ushered into acting. We see this happen in the Japanese entertainment industry. Maybe it's better managed there than it is in Korea, but the resurgence of the idol phenomenon is still quite new, and we're all scrambling trying to figure out how to make money. How can we market these idols in this congested market, that really the only way to make money was to get yourself on TV? So the way to get your group known, I mean, we've seen it through people who've been long-term cast on variety shows, who've worked on sitcoms, which is a place a lot of idol actors get their first role. There's a ton of people who got famous after being on Rainbow Romance, and so on and so forth. So sometimes, you know, it's a role that's not exactly going to get filled by a genius actor anyway. And sometimes you're in a position where a lot of drama would have gone a lot better had they cast an actual actor, and something like that is unfortunate. And the idol takes a lot of blame for that on his or her shoulders. And it's probably unfair to them, but it's also unfair to the person that's getting passed over, I guess. When it comes to K-pop addiction and how I balanced it with school, when I was actually in school, I don't know if it was a lot more time or just a lot more interest, but I spent a lot more time definitely keeping up with variety shows, following my favorite idol groups virtually, of course. And a lot of my time was consumed by them, aside from the time I spent hanging out with friends, watching anime and so on. But as I've gotten older, I've kind of lost interest in the following aspect. Like, what pops up on my Twitter feed, I may take a look at if the title is interesting enough. But in general, like, aside from actually listening to the music, which I do through the week whenever I have the opportunity, which is often. But other than that, like, there's no real in-depth really following, per se, of what's going on in K-pop. I've never been an active part of any fandom, so I should tell you, I guess, how easy it would have been for me to balance it. I may see something and talk about it with my friends offline or with a couple of them online, but for the most part, like, I never attended any fan gatherings. I don't even know if we ever had any in Florida. Probably not at the time I was in school. They probably do now. So for me, it's not quite difficult, and Noelle will probably have a similar story in terms of not really interacting with the fan base and generally being less exhausted. Like, it's a good thing to be able to plug into for a couple hours at a time, knowing you want to listen to some music, watch some music videos. It's all very good for stress relief, which I found that it positively affected me, the music itself. Not necessarily because it was so upbeat, but everything around it seemed upbeat. Although now I know that the story underneath the surface is a bit different. But my advice to you would be to use it as a de-stressor, which is great. To use the music to help you study, which is also fantastic, because music in general helps us when it comes to memorization and studying. But to try and stay away from the more stressful parts of it, i.e. the fandom, you can find yourself screaming down the rabbit hole at people if you let it get to you. So continue as you have been, I guess. I'm not sure exactly what you've been doing, but it is a fun, very fun thing to get into, as I'm sure you've learned, and I'm sure all of our listeners know at this point. And I would really love to see the fan base continue to grow and us to be able to continue to have a dialogue. So, thank you, Taylor. The last email is from Sky Aria, K-pop breakthrough. Hey, Dame Dr. Foxy B, sad to hear Noah will be missing. Hope all will be well soon. I would love to hear your opinion on if America's infatuation with Psy will really open the doors for K-pop in the States. I'm in the Midwest, so they started playing Gangnam Style about 2 months ago. But most people only see it as some funny Asian doing a crazy video. I feel like it is becoming this generation's Macarena in the sense that everyone wants to do the dance, but easily forgets the artist behind it. For K-pop to truly break through in the States, I think they will need 1. A seriously hot boy band. Let's face it, girls buy more tickets and albums than guys, and girls will buy way more merchandise from hot guys. A song in Korean with a very simple yet catchy hook. Americans are always looking for finding what's new and hot, not so much having something catered to them. 3. Tight dance moves. No one likes that walk to place mess that girls' generation does. 4. A sophisticated look, but have individual style. None of that aegyo cute band boy stuff. Americans don't get it. 5. When they do interviews, they must be charming and speak as much English as possible. No English. Americans are mean and will laugh at it. I think Americans demand originality and honesty from all their performers. Wonder Girls and Girls' Generation didn't create the market saturation they wanted because they, like they do in Japan, changed up their style to fit an American taste. Love to hear what you think. I'm kind of on the fence in terms of whether it needs to be male artists or female artists. I think if they're really honest with themselves, I think JYP is to a certain extent. There is a lot of fetishizing, I'm never able to say that word, around Asian females, in entertainment in particular, mostly by young white males, which is an important demo when it comes to making money. So in that respect, if someone is marketed properly, which I will easily admit I have no clue of how to do it, I know they didn't try that well with BoA. Even though Wonder Girls is a girl group, they seem to primarily be focusing on the young tween female demographic, so I don't know how well that's going to play out for them. They definitely seem to be in it for the long haul, so points to them there. The male boy band thing, maybe a bit of a difficulty. Obviously, we don't have to worry about what guys think about them, because guys are going to think that regardless. But a lot of the problem will be in getting girls who haven't grown up with Asian males as sex symbols to believe that they are. And that's where a lot of the problem lies. When it comes to a band, there's a lot of money behind promoting them. And if they can't find that audience, or they don't believe that enough girls will think that these guys are handsome and they go crazy over, like, for example, the One Direction dudes or Justin Bieber or whoever, which I never got the appeal with Justin Bieber, so I don't know why anybody thinks he's attractive. But that's basically what you would have to get. Somehow people with enough of a universal sexual appeal that it won't take that much difficulty for girls to get. Yeah, girls love abs and all that, but if it's not a type of guy that they're used to seeing as attractive, it's going to be a lot more difficult to sell them on. I do agree with you on the choreography. It has to be simple, but look hard, be interesting to look at, but easy to pick up, and it has to get people to want to do it. K-pop is almost built around catchy dances. JYP has it down to almost a science. It's ridiculous that something as simple as Nobody was able to be as popular as it was for such a long period of time, and part of that was due to the genius of the dance itself. In terms of the song, yeah, I agree that, like Gangnam Style, it has to probably be primarily in Korean, if not a good mix of the two languages, because any audience will want to sing along. And those of us that can shout out the random bits of Korean along with the song, it took us quite some time to get used to the sound of the language, to be able to do that in a way we feel comfortable with. And a lot of us will know, hey, if a natural Korean speaker heard us singing it, they would probably laugh. Just like the Americans would if they heard people singing English and try and correct us. So, I mean, obviously the English-speaking part of it is a given. Psy has the added benefit that a lot of idols don't have, in that he seems to have a mastery of the English language. Obviously, he's been in school in the States to a certain degree, where he can make witty jokes, has not become a bad, get the timing right, that sort of thing, where we agree that idols will be able to. But the majority of them, because they're so coached on everything. There are a few that are spontaneous, that are known for being witty, but they may not necessarily have the language that's needed. The sad part is that for a manufactured group to work, they would probably have to be built from the ground up with the intention of the US market, which a lot of people claim to be trying to do, but for the most part, it's just catered to a tiny bit of the international market. We have idols from North Korea, or we have idols from the US, so that we need to make an English video thanking our friends because we let this guy out of the girl do it. In terms of fashion, like, I don't know the worst person to ask, but I kind of get what you're saying. There's a lot of worry about band idol members being perceived as distant from each other, so they would all obviously have to be styled in an individual manner, and have different key points that would allow them to be presented just sort of the same way they are in Korea, where this guy's the funny one, so all the people who like the funny dudes, they have that guy to stand. This guy is the serious hot one who surprisingly says a lot of dumb things, and so on and so forth. Figuring out how that will work with American sensibilities is going to be a challenge. For the good part, you know, there seems to be a lot of interest, especially now. After Psy, the Macarena, dumb as it was, and the fact that those guys didn't have much of a career in the US after that point, we did have that sort of renaissance of Latin music in the US. And while it's not as big as it was at one point, there is still a subset of music industry that not only is primarily Latin music, but is also inspired by Latin music. And of course you have up-and-coming singers who probably would have never pursued their dreams had they not seen those people do it. I think Psy will have that same impact. We may not necessarily see Korean language hits on Billboard like we did Spanish language hits, because the population that understands Korean is not as big as the population that understands Spanish. That's a simple fact. I do think there's a sort of renewed interest. There's more people that are interested in seeing you know, what these idols that are worth millions of dollars could do for these individual companies within the U.S. So I think the next couple of years in K-pop is going to be really interesting. I know that they've been coveting the U.S. market for a long time, and the idea that it may be more possible than they thought is going to cause them to be a little more desperate. I think we definitely need a second person to get a foothold. Again, like most of everyone, we all doubt it's going to be the one that holds. But their single has been getting airplay, obviously not as much as Gangnam Style. And again, it's in English, maybe that's the wrong avenue. I don't know. Psy's hit seems to suggest that it is. But will he be able to have follow-up hits? Will he just be forgotten in a matter of months as, you know, the last one-hit wonder? Will the U.S. music industry go back to the status quo, locking for the most part Asian artists out? I guess the only thing to really say here is we'll see. I follow the whole thing with interest, you know. Will it be another YG artist? Will it be someone from a completely different company? Will it be someone with actual talent? Will it be people that are known better for dance than for singing, like a lot of American artists are? Only the future can tell, really. So thanks to all three of you, Tim, Taylor, and Blackstar, for emailing us. I love to hear from you guys, as it encourages the conversation, as it makes us seem like we're not just doing this for ourselves, which is great. As always, we're here if you have any questions about K-pop. We really just want to strike up a dialogue. Our aim with starting the podcast was to be the friend that like K-pop to some of you that don't have it. The email address is thealwaysrationalkpoppodcast@gmail.com. The website is airkpop.com, facebook.com/airkpop, and twitter.com/airkpoppodcast. If you want to join a forum, even though we're not the best forum people, ssaanetwork.freeforums.org. So, thanks for listening to me ramble for, I don't know how long this is, probably 45 minutes. I hope that Noel will be back soon, and if you guys want to send her any little wishes, you can email on Twitter or Facebook, and I'm sure you'll be happy to see them. Alright, thanks guys. Yeah.